Biden has a hard time condemning these riots, yeah. it's because he doesn't want to upset his base.
I just want everyone to realize how much left-wing dark money is out there.
They get their professional protesters onto campus to organize these kids and motivate them. She shows up for the appointment. They're like, oh, well, that's a mistake because you clearly died.
That's so this is
insane. The man, the myth, the mustache. Eric Hovde.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Just a catching strays over here.
You're in for a hell of a show.
Keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs.
It's time for our main event.
Welcome back to the Ruthless Variety program. I am Michael Duncan, here with me, comfortably smug, and John Ashbrook. No Holmes today, unfortunately. He's still on the road fighting the good fight.
But it's still going to be a great show.
It's a great
fast
show.
And furious.
It's a great show. Pre-production of the show was just incredible. I mean, folks, we got a lot of candy for you.
Yeah, it's going to be
There's
a good one.
A lot of funny stuff going on in the news right now. The campus protest, a whole bunch of stuff. But before we get into that, we got to play this clip. Have you guys seen Drew Barrymore's talk show that she has?
I didn't even know she had a talk show until I saw this like video clip everywhere. And I was like, oh, God. That's why I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, so it's very cringy. Mm-hmm. She has this fascination with getting uncomfortably close to people. It's uncomfortably smug. Basically her whole MO. Anyway, so they had a Kamala on the show, and they were discussing her nickname, which is like Mamala.
Oh, God.
Her stepchildren gave to her.
Okay.
Let's just go to the clip. You got to see this.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Oh my God! Holding of the hands, the prolonged eye contact.
How do you say that with a straight face?
So I saw some references to that on Twitter over the last day or so. I'd not seen the clip until just now. That is,
we need you to be Mamala.
That's crazy.
To keep from vomiting after saying something like that. I mean, I give her credit for that. That is so pathetic, and I think it's a huge problem that the left has is that. They're not looking for leaders. They're not looking for people who have solutions to the problem the country faces. They want a mommy or a daddy. And that's pathetic.
Yeah. And like, imagine that on a bumper sticker, like Biden 2024. You need a hug.
Yeah. Get the hell out of here.
No, but I think it reflects, like, much of, like, coastal Hollywood liberal elites and how they view America. You know what I mean? Like it's not about the issues that are animating the American electorate, the anger on about things like the open border. They think, like, everybody just needs a hug.
Yeah. I mean, dude, that's exactly it.
It's so empty.
We have an open border. Mm-hmm. You know, inflation keeps going through the roof. Americans are paying thousands more just for the basics than they were in the previous year, let alone at the start of this administration. They're like, you know what you got? I got a hug for you, buddy. Like, get the hell out of here. It's unreal. Unreal.
I don't think she can spell Mamala. If you're going to have somebody who's the Mamala, it should at least be someone who could spell the word.
It's just, I mean, it's completely pathetic. It's disgusting. It's sad. And I think that's a central problem that they have going for them is, again, they can't run on Biden's record.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be like, hey, look, things are better, right? Everyone's happy that you voted for him. They're like, I guess you need a hug and we need a Mamala.
The other thing they can't talk about is what they're going to do if he's reelected for four more years, because you know that everything he did to the border in these last 4 years, everything he's done with regulations in these last 4 years, he is going to do with our taxes in the next four. They are going to go up higher than they've ever been before if this guy is reelected.
Yeah.
And so they need to change the subject from absolutely anything they possibly can or to anything they possibly can to get rid of that topic.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it's not the only crazy thing we have on today's agenda. We have an update on the college protests, where they're shutting down quads and buildings at Columbia and all these other places across the country. Very fun update with a lot of hilarious clips. We're going to enjoy that one. Dave and Buster's is going to allow you to bet on arcade games.
No kidding.
Yeah. I can't wait for this.
Yeah. Like skee-ball.
I'm going to go to Dave and Buster's because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. All just right there in the Dave and Buster's power card, I guess, or an app or something like that. We'll get to it. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And then we also have Eric Hovde, U.S. Senate candidate in Wisconsin, running in a very critical battleground Senate race. Obviously, Wisconsin's going to be the epicenter of a lot of things, the presidential election, control of the United States Senate. He's a amazing guy. You may know him as the mustache. It's a great interview.
Awesome. I'm here for it.
Yeah. Well, we'll have that and more right after this.
I've told you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. You know, the ones who bought the Bidenomics.com website right from under Joe Biden's nose. They're the largest, most effective grassroots organization in the country. Following up on their Bidenomics coup, AFP is now launching a national Bidenomics tour to expose the weak Biden economy and hold the lawmakers who voted with Biden accountable. Americans will hear the facts and figures the mainstream media won't tell you about. How Joe Biden and his allies ignored warnings their policies would trigger runaway prices. How inflation is killing homeownership in the American dream, and how workers keep falling behind. And if the Bidenomics.com website is anything to go by, you can be sure it will be a lot of fun, too. To check out when the AFP Bidenomics tour is coming to your area, go to Bidenomics.com. That's Bidenomics.com.
Okay, so we got to get right into these college protests. There's a lot of hilarious updates from this. Did you guys see the clip of one of like the student leaders who's basically hosting a press conference or something, and some reporter was asking them questions, and they were talking about how they needed humanitarian relief?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw this on Twitter.
Yeah,
yeah. I think we should watch this clip.
Let's get right to it.
Why should the university be obligated to provide food to people who've taken over a building?
First of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid rest. Could people please have a glass of water?
Do you know, she's like, this sounds crazy. Do you know why it sounds crazy? Because it's crazy.
Because it's crazy.
That's a pretty good sign.
Yeah.
You know, I saw this really great tweet. I can't remember who put it out, but Bill Ackman quote retweeted, and he was like, read this. And this lady had a breakdown of what these kids, these clowns on these campuses are doing when they say stuff like, we're just asking for basic humanitarian aid. The problem here is these babies are in these Ivy League bubbles, right? And what they're doing is because they've never faced a real struggle of their own, right? Like, mom and dad got them into that school. Mm-hmm. They're on some beautiful campus that they're hoping taxpayers will pay their tuition for.
Right.
And so their cosplaying is like, oh my God, we're freedom fighters and we're struggling and we need humanitarian aid. So they are just like using an example of something happening overseas and making it about them, acting out like they are going through it.
Yeah.
Because they've never experienced any sort of hardship that would require humanitarian aid. They've never had a real fight in their life.
Yeah, it's sort of like that live action role playing. It's a LARP for them.
100%.
They can sort of pretend like they're just like refugees in Africa or something.
Yeah.
But their trust fund is paying for the meal plan. What that means is that the university is required to fight their way through the riots. And what do they just like give them on demand food, like a filet mignon and like a truffle mashed potatoes?
Well, they've been used to having that.
Chablis.
You know, growing up, they're used to having that when they're living in Connecticut. They'd ring the bell and the butler brings them their filet mignon. So like, why can't that continue while I'm here on campus demanding my humanitarian aid? Get over there. If you're a real freedom fighter, get over there.
Yeah.
I wonder why they aren't.
Go to Gaza. food and meal plans aren't the only thing that these protesters are complaining about. They're also complaining the police are keeping them from being able to take their finals. Mm-hmm. And they're very upset about that. Let's play that clip.
They just barricaded us.
Oh, my fucking God.
You're left.
No fucking way.
We
You know? Fuck you! It's finals! Can I go home?
I've got gender studies tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I love about that is, like, it, like, finally got real for them. They're like, we want to occupy this building and take it over. And then they're like, all right, well, we're just going to shut these doors and you can have it. And they're like, oh, no. I didn't think you were going to let us. I have finals. I want to take tests.
It's because when you grow up with a trust fund and you go to Columbia, you are conditioned to believe that this is a world without consequences.
That's right.
You never have had consequences. Your parents never disciplined you as a kid when you did something wrong. They just gave you more money and said, you go over there and stop bothering me so that I can go back and do whatever it is they were doing besides paying attention to their kid. Mm-hmm. Trust funds, everything that you could possibly want in the world except for a good head on your shoulders. And these kids have, I mean, I feel like they're much worse off.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. All right. So, I don't know if you guys remember this. I'm sure you do, Smug. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the liberal dark money nexus that funds this sort of activity on college campuses, and we basically called it a RICO scheme, which I think it is.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is, and I'm really glad to see that Fox News has been covering this now, trying to pull back the layers of funding that are sending professional protesters to these college campuses to rile up these kids. Let's play that Fox News clip.
Good morning, Bill. At least $1.3 million came from two liberal foundations, the Rockefeller Brothers and George Soros, but there are many other Democrat-led dark money groups that funnel money outside the IRS reporting structure that pay for talking points, posters, recruiting, activists who go campus to organize these protests. Who are they? What do they want? And where is their money coming from? These protest groups go by different names. The largest, Students for Justice in Palestine, receives funds, among others, from a liberal New York foundation called Westpac. Another group, the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, claims to have led 43 protests or demonstrations last year. It provides banners and signs, salaries and stipends to hire fellows and activists who go campus to campus running campaigns demanding the U.S. cut ties with Israel. The Campaign for Palestinian Rights reported $1.3 million in revenue in 2022, much of it coming from the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and George Soros Open Society Foundation.
There it is. I mean, and we have been talking about this for so long. Like, it's my pet project is I just want everyone to realize how much left-wing dark money is out there. Soros, Hans-Jörg Wyss, all these left-wing billionaires, even from overseas, that pour money into these causes, whether it's these idiots who chain themselves to highways, whether it's these idiot kids who are screwing up their campuses and causing problems. All of this, like, if you can find something in your life that is causing a problem, whether it's like a new mandate from the government, they're trying to take away your gas, left-wing dark money. It's like they're just hell-bent on spreading misery. And the fact that for so long, conservatives have been saying, this seems really organized and well-funded.
Right.
And then, and like mainstream music, like, no. That's a conspiracy theory, guys.
They would love to pretend that this is a grassroots upswelling of people who support Hamas, right?
Yep.
And in reality, it's bankrolled by billionaires of the left wing, and they get their professional protesters onto campus to organize these kids and motivate them.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about this is, you see these kids on this campus, you know, fighting with police, occupying buildings on campus. Did you ever see George Soros' son doing this? No. Mm-hmm. He was on Daddy's PJ. He's going to Geneva. He's going to those WF meetings. He's meeting with every, like, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, every big wig on the Dem side over here. He's not showing up to these protests.
Yeah.
He'll bankroll them. His family will bankroll them, but he doesn't show up because he knows it's stupid. It's a waste of your time. These kids are throwing away what they could be doing with their time in college. Not only they could be having fun, let alone the education part, but they're throwing themselves away because of these groups that are being bankrolled by these idiots.
Well, there are real Americans who are not being bankrolled by anybody, who are actually pushing back against these morons, and they're standing up. And I don't know if you guys caught what happened on the campus. I think it was at UNC, where the Hamas protesters were like trying to tear down the American flag and replace it with a Palestinian flag or something like that. And there's a group of dudes who basically like surrounded the American flag
and fraternity bros
wouldn't let them do it.
Yeah.
And George Soros, and nobody's paying these guys to stand in front of the American flag. They just know that America is more important than whatever these terrorists are trying to do. Do we have that? Oh, yeah, we have that picture up right now. I mean, what a picture.
So
what an image.
So my takeaway from this image is you see this happening at UNC. Mm-hmm. You don't see it happening at NC State. That's pathetic. Chapel Hill is another. But the funny thing is Chapel Hill is one of these journalism feeder schools. Same as like Northwestern. All these journals go there. They get radicalized on this campus, and then they start writing for national papers. Like, good for those guys for standing up. But the fact that it's happening in North Carolina at UNC tells you everything you need to know about that.
Well, school. They weren't the only ones standing up last night. I don't think we have the video, but there was a group of cops in New York that tore down the Palestinian flag and raised the American flag back up. And it was just like, man, here we are again. New York cops on the front line of our country's freedom.
Yeah.
And it was just I had a flashback to the heroics that we have seen so much over the years from New York cops.
It's like the Marines at Iwo Jima. Isn't it crazy we have to do that in our own country now?
It's wild. Unreal. It's sad, yeah.
But I mean, hopefully lawmakers get to the bottom of this left-wing dark money flow, and because you know the mainstream press is not going to do anything about it. Thank God for William Lajeunesse and Fox News for like trying to start to put the pieces together. Hopefully our government can do something to sort of stop this terrorism from brewing on the inside.
And it's going to have to come at the federal level because, you know, remember we discussed on the show how in D.C., Arabelle Advisors, which is like a nexus of this left-wing dark money, was supposedly being investigated by the D.C. AG, supposedly. And within like 5 days, they're like, oh, yeah, nothing here, nothing to see. It's like, well, of course. Of course the Democrats are going to say that. They're not going to investigate it. They're not going to do anything about it. That's half the problem is most of these protests, most of this garbage you're seeing happens in blue states because of how much they've already gotten their cogs in there. The prosecutor is funded by these people. These activists that are going campus to campus are funded by these people. The media now, we've talked about all these fake news outfits that have been springing up all over the country ahead of the election. Funded by left-wing dark money. They're all funded by it.
And it's like Holmes always says, Hamas is now a constituency of the Democrat Party.
That's right.
So they are placating them. There was a headline in Axios, or maybe it wasn't a headline. It was something in Axios that it was explaining why Biden has a hard time condemning these riots. Yeah. It's because he doesn't want to upset his base. They printed that.
Straight up.
His base are these rioters. Get out of town.
That's it.
I feel like if anything pushes center of the road voters back toward Trump, it's that this kind of lunacy is associated with Biden.
Yeah, and the numbers are very, very clear on this. The Hill reported on this new Harvard-Harris poll on who do you support more in the Gaza war, you know, Israel or Hamas. 80% Israel. But it does show exactly what you're saying, Ashbrook. 20% is a lot.
Huge. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of voters. And it's why Biden's hands are tied in this whole thing.
Completely brainwashed. Hamas doesn't care about Palestinians.
No, not in the least. We've seen that. Like when the relief packages that the U.S. sends over there arrive, Hamas isn't distributing them. They're selling them.
Right. And then if somebody tries to come and get food, they shoot them.
They'll shoot them.
They're not listening to complaints about a meal plan.
Yeah. They should. Honestly, that's where the students should go. Go over there and try to see about getting humanitarian aid.
Yeah, just sign up for your meal plan in Gaza. Yeah. That'll go really, really well. You guys want to get some candy here?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Okay, so I think this is the greatest little bit of variety we've done in quite a while. And that is Dave & Buster's will now allow customers to bet on arcade games. So basically, they're going to have a wagering app. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like you can go up to skee ball with your buddy and be like, all right, $5 on who wins this game. Because, you know, when you're older, it's like how many tickets can get the, you know, stuffed animal. Doesn't matter to you. But a little friendly wager amongst friends. Can you imagine?
Amazing. Yeah, I'm reading this right now. Yeah, you do it within the app. And like everything is now becoming gambling on an app, apparently.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you got like FanDuel. You've got all these that have taken over in terms of like, I mean, at least I'd guess 75% of the guys I know bet on sports using one of these apps. It was only a matter of time till every business is like, well, how can we get in on this bonanza? But I will say, terrific idea.
Yeah.
I mean, 100% a great idea.
So what happens, though, when it's not just two buddies gambling with each other on the skee ball, but then there's two buddies behind those two buddies gambling on the outcome of their bet?
That's my hope. Can you do that, or is it only like you?
I don't know.
They should allow that.
I hope they allow it, because I can just imagine sitting there having a couple of pops, watching some drunk college kids at the Papa Shot, and like, you could You could really, really have a great night with that.
They should start doing it at those, like, putt-putt places. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just bet on anything that you possibly can. Why not?
Yeah, like, you hang out by the pizza, and you start scouting. You've got to scout a little bit.
Kid's got a good swing.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Rat Race?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Very funny. Like, it opens up, and there are these maids hanging on to the curtains, and you're like, what is going on? And it's like they just start falling. And then a bunch of guys are in the background. They bet on how long the maids go on to the curtains before they fell.
That's where we're headed.
And then they go into it's a bunch of rich guys in like a private jet. And they're like, the private jet's like going all over the place. And then the first person to throw up, they bet on who's going to.
See, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a very funny concept. Well,
just imagine if everybody could bet on the two guys playing skee ball. Like the amount of money that could change hands within that Dave and Buster's.
Seriously.
Like that would be electric. Like, do you remember in The Big Short where they were trying to explain what a synthetic CDO was?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they had this blackjack game and, you know, is Selena Gomez going to win? And then people behind them betting on the outcome of that bet. And then the people behind those people betting on the outcome of their bet. And very quickly, it goes from like one bet to 10,000 bets.
That's how it works.
And that crashed the American economy. But this sounds fun.
I feel like Dave and Buster's is about to have a profitable quarter or two.
I mean, it's not a bad idea at all.
Okay, so we got to get to this other story here in the old variety section. And that is out of Britain. You know, they've got their government-run nationalized healthcare over there, which things don't seem to be doing too well. This is from the BBC. A woman who turned up for a hospital scan only to be told that she had already died has demanded an explanation. Bridlington Hospital staff told Susan Johnson, according to the records, she had been dead for 4 months. Can you believe that? She shows up for the appointment. They're like, oh, well, that's a mistake because you clearly died.
This is
insane. First of all, Bridlington is the perfect name for an English hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't have made up a better, more English name for a hospital than Bridlington.
Yeah, or like Wickersham on the Shire.
The next point in here, is what's completely insane. It says that because you know, she's in the records as being dead, Her allowances for coverage were gone.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, well, geez. Since you're dead, we can't really pay for your health care, can we now?
I mean, this is a bureaucratic nightmare.
That's a thing.
Nightmare. Yeah. Can you believe that?
I mean, I actually can, dude. Like, you always hear these stories over there of it's like, if you have a heart attack, try to have it before April, because like after April they get so backed up that it's like, well, good luck getting a bypass afterwards. Like they filled their allotment to that point. And I mean, this is what really happens whenever you let the government get involved with your decisions. Like imagine how bad it is at the DMV waiting to get something done, or the post office trying to get something done. And if you show up and they're like, oh, well, we need to fill out some forms to prove that you're not dead, so we can actually see you.
And the stakes are a little bit higher there. It's not about renewing your driver's license. It's like, oh, I need a new heart. Oh, all right. Well, we should really get to this interview. Eric Hovde, who's running for United States Senate in Wisconsin, critical battleground. He's a fantastic guy. You're not going to want to miss this. I want to welcome the program a wonderful guy. Candidate for United States Senate from the great state of Wisconsin, the man, the myth, the mustache, Eric Hovde. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great being on your show.
Yeah. People know you now for the mustache.
It's taken a life unto itself.
You know, like, do people like come up to you on the campaign trail and they're like, hey, that's a great duster you got.
You know, it's very interesting. I get controversial views on it, and I can't figure this one out totally. But older men tend not to like it.
Huh. Mm.
Younger men love it.
Yeah.
Older women tend to like it. Younger women tend to not like it as much.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know that dynamic. I think young guys just so badly want to have facial hair that they want it, and they think it's cool, and there's been a revival. I don't know if older guys just remember when they used to do it, now they don't have it or whatever. Women, you know, I can get that. You know, a lot of older women grew up with watching Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
And guys in the 70s that had facial hair. And
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, exactly. And younger women, yeah, I can get why it's probably not as much their thing. But it's funny, the very first person after I announced, or actually the day before I announced, she looked at me and said, I saw an article about you. Are you that guy? You got that stash. That's how I knew you. She goes, that's good. People remember you for that.
Well, look, and you guys brought us these wonderful coffee mugs, razor sharp here with the mustache right there. I love it.
It's just such great branding. Yeah. It is such great branding. It's brilliant. You guys are off to such a hot start in this Senate race. And first of all, the fact that you got in the race is huge for Wisconsin. I mean, Republicans have been looking for an answer to Tammy Baldwin for years and years and years. And you stepped up. You know, you raise your hand. You're like, I'm going to get into this thing. And we're very, very lucky that you decided to do it. You've had a tremendous first quarter for fundraising, and there's new Marquette poll that shows that you're neck and neck with likely voters. I mean, you got to be amazed at how this is going.
Look, it's gone better than I could have imagined. It was helpful that I didn't have a brutal primary. Some people were looking at it, and I think they decided they didn't want to jump in and take me on and then take on Senator Baldwin. Look, she needs to go. It's just that simple. I mean, you talk about a rubber stamp for all of Joe Biden's failed policies. 95.5% of the time she votes with Joe Biden. I kid around. We did something, me and my wife, and, you know, I love my wife. We've been together for 30 years. She's the reason why I got the stash, because I always have a beard, shaved everything off 4 or 5 years ago, left it, and she just loved it. And, you know, she determines when the stash comes and goes. But, you know, my wife and I have had a great relationship. But as we laugh, you know, I don't agree with her 95.5% of the time. And she sure the hell doesn't agree with me 95.5% of the time. She generally wins most of those things. But, you know, happy wife, happy life. But, you know, look, Senator Baldwin, she's been a career politician. She literally came out of college, ran for our county board, then a state assembly, and then Congress, and then Senate. She has nothing to bring, nothing to offer. She's never operated in the real world. You know, we have a healthcare crisis in our country. She's never had to buy healthcare for herself, much less other employees. I've had to buy healthcare for thousands of people. Mm-hmm. I understand the complications of healthcare and what Obamacare did very negatively. And I wish Republicans would talk more about that and run on that issue more. But look, it was a hard decision to jump into it because, you know, this political thing, I always say, no matter how bad you think it is and ugly it is, multiply it by 10 and you may get there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're launching lawsuits at my bank to try to, you know, create news stories. Yeah. So, you know, it's an ugly business, but as I like to say, I love my country. And I know that may sound a bit corny, but I was raised very patriotic. You know, I was brought up in the era of Ronald Reagan. My father served President Reagan. And, you know, he expressed the importance of our country. And I've been in 100 countries around the world. I have homeless shelters in 9 countries, 4 in Africa, 5 in Central and South America for street children, rescuing them from sex trafficking, slavery in Ghana.
So this is the Hubdi Homes project?
Yeah, my foundation. I've had a foundation since the late 90s, first started funding medical research in MS.
Wow.
Now people may ask, why MS? Because I have MS. I've got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at 27 years old. And that's, you know, that's a tough thing to get that kind of diagnosis. So, you know, I was on the National MS Board, International MS Board, funded a lot of research in it. I'm a health fitness nut because of it. You know, knock on wood, I've done very well. But then I ended up morphing my foundation to rescuing street children around the world. So I'm not quite sure how I got off on this topic, but the point is—
Oh, no, go for it.
Yeah, you know, we have somebody in Senator Baldwin who has no real-life knowledge.
Right.
And we need people that can bring a wealth of experience into our country, into our capital. that can help govern this country a lot better. And I think, you know, with the background I have in the world of business, I'm a serial entrepreneur with my foundation and all the rest. I felt compelled to try to give back to my country because I love my country. I know where I was going with that. You know, having been all over the world, you realize the importance of this country, mm-hmm. and we've lost that in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sad thing. Mm-hmm. Younger people aren't patriotic about their own country anymore. They've been told that something's wrong with it, something's bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at these crazy protests on college campuses right now.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I mean, you know, and a lot of these people are professional protesters, but they also...
Yeah, talk about people who lack real-world experience, right?
Yeah. You know? I mean, that you rip on this country. Every time I go around the world and, you know, I don't just go off to resorts or Paris and hang out in Paris. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Paris and parts of Italy and nice spots. But you go to the rest of the world, you see how the rest of the world operates. You come back, you're very appreciative of what we have here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm off in this race, and it's gone better than I could have hoped for.
Yeah, so you are sort of a fitness nut, right?
Yep, total fitness nut.
I saw the video of you doing this polar plunge thing, which, I mean, I think is crazy. But yeah. But I was very impressed by that. And I also saw, I thought you got attacked for that. You know, there were some, like, Democrats who were tweeting at you. What was that all about?
Heck if I know. So I got into the power of cold, as I call it, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. Because I still lift and play tennis and do all that stuff, and my joints just start to hurt. So, you know, what do professional football players, basketball players do after they compete?
Oh, the ice bath.
They go sit in an ice bath because it collapses inflammation.
Yeah.
Well, that started it, but then I started to do more research on it and then start to learn it improves your immune system, and there's reasons and theories behind that. And then what you also realize, it gives you a high because it releases all these positive chemicals. So I've gotten into the power of cold. There's a guy by the name of Wim Hof.
Yeah.
Wim, H-O-F-F. He's the Iceman.
Also breathing.
Yeah, breathing. I do some of his breathing techniques.
Nice.
And, you know, so I work out hard, you know, typically an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours in the morning. And then, you know, 3-4 times a week if I can get into the power of cold.
Wow.
So, yeah. Wow. And why the left, you know, they rip on everything.
I know.
They destroy everything.
They just can't have any fun anymore.
They, you know what? I don't know why we on the right don't talk about that more.
Yeah.
They are a buzzkill.
Right.
On everything. I mean, they destroyed comedy. You know, they destroy serious things. They've destroyed our schools. They've destroyed our major cities. They've messed up healthcare. They've destroyed our finances. But they even killed just the fun aspects of culture and comedy.
Yeah.
So, you know, let them stew in their juices. That's my view. I'll sit and soak in my ice bath, and they can all have a heart attack.
I love that. I love that.
So I've got a question. You grew up in Madison.
Yep.
Home of the University of Wisconsin. College town.
Yep.
There aren't a whole lot of people who grew up in college towns that turn out to be Republicans. So how in the world did you go from college townie to becoming such a successful businessman and a Republican at the same time?
You know, that's a hell of a good question. I was kind of, you know, a weird kid from the standpoint. My favorite thing, TV show back in when I was like 6th, 7th grade was World News Tonight.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
I just love following the news. Back when you used to get real news and quality news.
Yeah.
And then President Reagan came along. And my father got asked to serve in his administration, but I was already kind of watching him and loved to hear what he had to say. And a lot of it resonated with me. Plus, when you, I think, have common sense and are well-grounded and you see some of the crazy policies of the left, I think it makes you more conservative. If you have to be surrounded by, you know, a bunch of wackadoodles all the time making terrible policies, it makes you more firmly convicted in your beliefs. As far as being an entrepreneur, I was always kind of driven that way. I knew I wanted to get into the world of business. I wanted to be successful. So that kind of unfolded. But yeah, as it pertains to the conservative side, you know, probably Ronald Reagan played a big role in that.
Yeah. And the other thing that, I mean, you sort of touched on this earlier, But there are so many politicians and career politicians already working in Washington. There are so many attorneys. There are not enough business people who actually succeeded on the outside and can bring real life experience into the Senate. So I'm wondering, what are the top one or two things that you would want to do right when you get there? What are some ways that you could help small businesses and help other people who are sort of struggling under this economy?
Well, I'm going to take the big issue and then take the layers off of it. So first of all, and not to turn this into a buzzkill, but because of the fiscal mismanagement of this country for the last 20 years, but particularly the last 3.5 years, this country's already entered a debt trap. And what does that mean? We have $34 trillion in debt, staggering number. But the interest cost in our debt now is the second largest expenditure in the federal government, bigger than our defense department.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, and it's expected to move in the next year bigger than even the cost of Social Security. So what happens then? What's already occurred? The Federal Reserve has to, the bank for the federal government, the Federal Reserve, has to go in and buy and monetize that debt through a program called quantitative easing. That's why their balance sheet grew so tremendously under COVID and also during the Great Financial Recession. When they do that, they create more money. Well, what is inflation? Inflation is more money chasing the same amount of fixed goods and services. So we've already had the worst inflation bout in the last 40 years, but this isn't the end of it. We're going to get worse inflation bouts coming at us into the future because we've so destroyed our fiscal situation.
Terrifying.
So, you know, think of how insane this is. We took up the spending of the federal government by 40% during COVID. We shut down the economy. Okay, once the economy got reopened up, don't you think we would have brought the expenditures back down to where we were before that?
Yeah.
Our population didn't grow by 40%, but they keep spending that money. So we're going to have to start making some very serious cuts because we're going to be forced to. The Federal Reserve is already struggling to control what is called the long end of the yield curve. That all that means is treasury rates and the interest rate structure in the mid to longer term, and that's going to become more complicated as we move forward. So how are we going to deal with this big debt problem? We're going to have to make cuts, but we got to get expansion of our economy. And we're going to have to do that in several ways. Pro-growth policies, deregulation. President Reagan pushed through deregulation that really helped the growth of the 1980s. There was an estimate done, a study done back in 2012, that they estimated the amount of regulations cost the U.S. economy on an annual basis $1.7 to $2.4 trillion. Think of that. And that was 2012 dollars. So that's a big thing. How to get people back to work. We had welfare reform, under Bill Clinton. That was very beneficial and helped get more people drawn into the workforce. All that has been eroded. So to me, one of the big things that I think I can bring to the U.S. Senate is a understanding of how the economy works, particularly our globalized, financialized economy, and helping deal with that issue. After that, there's a whole raft of different issues. Healthcare, again, a lot of these politicians have never had to understand the healthcare system, how it operates. Obamacare has created a mess. The Democrats keep running on it like it's been a big benefit. But if you look at the cost of health care and the access to health care, costs have gone up, access has gone down. The only thing that they latch onto is pre-existing conditions. Look, I have MS. You know, I appreciate that being part of it. But everything else was a disaster. So there's a variety of different things. But I think the bringing the economic competency to the Senate, not to say there's not other senators, but I think I'm in a unique position from that standpoint.
So let's take it to the other side, a little lighter topic here. Holmes isn't here.
I think he was scared because he's a Vikings fan. Yeah. And, look, the Packers are just going to be whipping ass on the Vikings both times this year.
And he hates the Packers.
And you know what's interesting? What you got to really chide him about? The NFC North is probably going to be the most dominant division in pro football the next 3 to 4 years. And I mean that seriously. Think of it. The Packers are loaded. We have Jordan Love, and we've got four receivers that can run the 40 in like 4.3 and 4.2. Okay, I don't know how anybody's – they ate up Dallas. I was down there at that game. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet you like
and
that.
And when we were walking out of Cowboy Stadium, you heard, go, Pack, go. Go, Pack, go. Go. It, I felt like I was in Lambeau. So it was fantastic. So we got the Packers. Then we got the Lions.
Yeah, they're which are, coming. You know, on the come up.
I mean, geez, they should have beat the 49ers just like we should have. So they're going to be a top team. And then the Bears got so many dang draft picks,
I know.
They're loaded, so they're going to be better. The only one left out is the Vikings.
Oh no!
So you got to tell Holmes, you know, hey, look, you know, he purposely didn't show up here because he didn't want to hear, you know, smack talk.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in pain this year, you know.
Well, you know, it's the great thing that I love about the draft is nobody's broken your heart yet.
Yeah,
you know, so like he still has all of his hope, you know, because we were goofing on him ahead of the draft. We're like, what if you don't get a QB? Is Sam Darnold going to get you there?
Yeah,
you know. But he feels pretty good about JJ McCarthy. We'll see how that all works out. I don't know.
You know what? Look, I think he will end up being a good pro football player. I always thought he could be a sleeper because in pro football for quarterbacks, it's not the most athletic guy. Let's face it, Tom Brady wouldn't even been in the top 500 most athletic, 1,000. It was his mental chip and his ability to process and then deliver a well-thrown ball on the spot throughout all the chaos. So I think he's going to end up being good. But look, any quarterback other than Patrick Mahomes, and it's a rare one, that is going to be – anything that meaningful in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
It takes time. And I think that's one thing the Packers have always done. You know, all of them have kind of sat on the bench. Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. They all sat on the bench the first year.
What an embarrassment of riches. You know, you guys are really so spoiled up there.
We are. I love it. I freaking love it.
Yeah, the Brewers are leading the division.
Yeah.
They're off to a hot start. I mean, it's a lot going on in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And the Bucs came back last night. And if they can win game six, then watch out for the Bucs because finally we will get Giannis back.
Yeah.
And Dame will, they say, may be back in game six. So it would be interesting to see if the Bucs could have all their three superstars playing together at some point. But, you know, I don't know if they'll get through game six, but if they do, look out. They could start making a big run.
Yeah,
if the Bucs go deeper than the Timberwolves and the Packers go deeper than the Vikings, I think Holmes is going to lose his mind.
Well, then you guys got to invite me back for a surprise appearance.
Yeah.
I'll just show up and you'll say, hey, Josh, we got one guy who wants to come on in and say hi and just talk about some sports and all that. And I'll sit down. Maybe I'll wear a cheese hat on my head and you know, a buck shirt or something like that. Fear the deer.
Yeah.
Just totally bum him out.
That's fantastic. And we're all excited about this summer convention in Milwaukee. Wonderful venue. I mean, that place and everything around it is really well designed. And I mean, I think this is going to be a great convention this summer.
I think it is, too. Look, you know, I know a lot of people here in Wisconsin and they, you know, stay the heck away from wintertime. I can't disagree with you. I don't mind the winters. But there is very few places that are better when you get into late May, June, July, August, September, October. You just don't. I mean, it will. The weather will be perfect. You know, you've got Lake Michigan. You'll have great live music. It's going to be hopping. I'm going to definitely throw a party at one of my buildings
and that's all the rest.
So, it's going to be rock and rolling. It's going to be a hell of a fun time.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we can't wait for that. And we have three questions that we got to ask you before we let you go.
All right.
The first one's pretty easy. If you could pick your last meal on Earth, what would it be?
Well, that ain't easy because I have two favorite meals, either a big veal chop with some roasted potatoes, some, you know, nice roasted vegetables, a good salad. Of course, you've got to start, if I'm having veal chop, with, you know, a good glass of bourbon or two.
Nice. And you brought us right. Yeah. Thank you very much. For that.
You're very welcome. And then, you know, some probably good Italian red wine, be it a Chianti, a Barolo, you know, something along that lines with veal chop. Or my other is a really nice whitefish, sea bass, or if you're in Wisconsin, a walleye, with a side of pasta with marinara. I love the marinara with the whitefish. Again, some nice roasted vegetables and a nice salad there. Well, I love tequila. That's probably my favorite thing. I'm a self-admitted tequila-holic, but that I'd probably start with a Negroni because I really like Negronis, a good Italian drink. And then I would pair that up with probably a good Chablis.
Wow,
or
guys, yeah. Really thought through
like
it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, those are my two favorite meals,
it's,
man. Yeah.
It's the last one on earth.
Oh, you got to go out.
Oh, you got to go out with a bang. Big. I mean, come on, you're going big.
Yeah.
It's good, and there's not like a next morning, so you can mix all of your
oh,
drink.
And then you got to finish it off with a dessert, maybe a chocolate molten lava cake with some vanilla ice cream on top, because I love chocolate, but I'm also ice cream's another weakness. So.
I love that.
Okay, next question. If you could go back, and I mean, you obviously had a hugely successful career in business and have done so much on the philanthropic side of things, and so you've done a lot of what you wanted to do. But if you can go back and wave a magic wand and do anything you choose, I mean, it could be like Ted Cruz said he would have played in the NBA. So you can pick anything.
This can be a dream.
Is there anything that you would do differently?
Or it could be practical. Yeah, it could be practical.
Well, look, I have really lived my life to the fullest. I'm one of these guys that believes you just suck everything out of life. That's why I've been all over the world. I'm an adventure guy. You know, I should have been born a few hundred years ago. You know, my Viking heritage, I'm Norwegian, probably should have been rowing across the North Sea, getting ready to go, you know, sack Constantinople, you know. But, you know, I often thought I wouldn't have minded going into the special forces for when I was younger.
Oh yeah,
I was, you know, I fought martial arts. I could have seen myself doing a stint in the special forces when I was in my 20s.
Yeah,
that would have been good. Other than that, since I love adventure travel, I could have lived, you know, somewhere else in the globe doing some kind of adventure gig.
Yeah.
So that would be it. But, you know, I really can't complain. I look at my life. I've lived a very blessed life. I've accomplished most of anything I've wanted to do in the world of business. And because, you know, I'm a Christian and believe to whom much is blessed, much is expected, and where a man's heart goes, so goes his treasure. I've done a lot in the charitable world and will continue to do that. So there's not a lot of changes I'd make in my life.
Yeah. Well, very well said. Okay, third question is, we see people are motivated by one of two things, and it's the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat. And the thrill of victory is sort of like the eternal optimist, march up the hill and with a smile on your face because you know that something's going to be good around the corner. The agony of defeat is like the Michael Jordan type, who anything you've lost, any slight, anything from previous years in your life, you sort of wear it around for the rest of your life, and it motivates you to get up the next day and to strive ahead. So on that scale, where do you find yourself? Thrill of victory or agony of defeat?
Thrill of victory. Mm-hmm. Look, in life, you're going to get defeated. You're going to have I don't want to say defeated. You're going to have losses. Mm-hmm. You never want to look, I've been defeated. No, you will have your losses. You have to move on from them. Let them go off your back and charge hard and learn from them. Mm-hmm. But the joy of, you know, accomplishing something big and reveling in that, you know, I love the thrill of victory. But look, I'm like anybody else. I'm super competitive. I hate losing. I hate losing. But you got to let that go. So I'm more motivated by the thrill of victory.
Yeah. Man,
that's great.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, you know? Okay, so if people want to help your campaign, just a reminder to our listeners, this is Wisconsin here. We're talking, you know, swing state in the presidential and in the Senate and all of this sort of stuff. There's going to be millions and millions of dollars spent. If folks want to help your campaign, where do they go?
EricHovde.com. So that's E-R-I-C-H-O-V, like victory, D, like David, E, like Eric. EricHovde.com.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, look, I'd appreciate anybody's support. These things are ridiculously expensive. I'm putting a big check in, but I need to raise a lot of money. So
send some money to the mustache.
Yeah. I should have also had a tag like donation spot, you know, stash it in a goes or something like that.
Yeah, a little ticker that fills up a mustache. Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Guys, it's been great being on your show. And seriously, you got to have me back if the Packers kick the Vikings butt.
You don't have to sell us on that. Yeah. We'll laugh our asses off. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
That mustache is something else. I mean, I really, really am so glad this guy is running. I'm so glad that we have a shot in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I actually think he's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, one look at that mustache and you can see why he's doing so well.
And you know, so the way I actually learned about him, I want to say this was about a month ago, was so he was known for, like, you know, the Hub Day homes, mm-hmm. that he opens all these homes for the homeless, essentially.
Yeah.
And the media tried writing an article being like, this fat cat owns so many houses. They're called the Hub Day homes because he's opened them for homeless people.
Yeah, there's people who've survived like sex trafficking, you know? And he's like, oh, he's the elitist.
He's the bad guy. Yeah.
But that tells you they understand how critical this race is in Wisconsin. That's why you start seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, that's how hard they're going to go in the paint trying to destroy this guy who's like clearly a very cool, nice guy.
Yeah.
I really think that Wisconsin is teetering on top tier pickup opportunity for Republicans. Of course, we have West Virginia, Montana, and Ohio that look pretty good for us. But I think Wisconsin is right there with those three.
Great pickup.
So we haven't done it in a while, but to close today's show, we got to get back into these five stars, which we just love to read.
Ooh, nice. We got five stars in
here
today?
We got the five stars.
Terrific.
And in the five stars, we first always go to the voice.
Well, this first one comes from Maine Mom CH, and it's titled Sweetness in My Ears from a Marathoner. Maine Mom CH writes, I took up serious running 3 years ago, and while I was prepping for my first marathon, my husband kept telling me to run the race exactly as I did on any other long run. So I hoarded a few episodes of the program and had the animal news and guffaws and great interviews in my ears the entire way.
Wow.
I felt like I had my best friends right alongside me, encouraging me as I worked through the pain. You've been with me for 4 marathons so far, and number 5 is on the horizon in June.
That's incredible.
Thanks for the lightness and what seems like a lot of darkness right now. P.S., it can be embarrassing to burst out laughing in the gym, but sometimes I just can't help it. The banana pool never fails to entertain.
Oh, I love that.
I do, too.
That is impressive.
I love that.
I 4 too. Marathons?
Yeah.
I do, too.
All right, Smug, what do you got for us?
So this comes from 1964, interesting name, first-time reviewer of any podcast. I found you guys through Megyn Kelly's show.
Nice.
If she loves you, you've got to be good. Listening to you for the first time today, so far, so good. Thank you so much, and thank you to Megyn Kelly. Yeah. We get so many of those.
They're fantastic.
That's awesome.
All right, here's this last one. This is a long one from Ben M. The title here is 5 Stars, with a caveat. Fellas, I heard about the show by doing a Google search for best conservative podcast, and it was between y'all and Megyn Kelly, again with Megyn Kelly. Mm. Since the first episode I listened to, I haven't missed a single one. Your humor makes being a conservative feel like a good thing for the first time in a long time, and the insights you have on the political system are second to none. Now for the caveats. I am one of the few and the proud who are soccer fans in this country.
Oh, amazing.
And I am happy there is some representation, but not nearly enough. Hear, Ben. It is my opinion that being a fan of the U.S. national team is one of the most patriotic teams to follow in our country on a regular basis.
No.
We have young men representing our country on the world stage, and in the moments of victory, we get the opportunity to cheer for the USA. Not in irony or out of obligation, but out of true celebration of who we are as a country, and one day we will dominate the world in every sport. Second caveat. While I mostly agree with your musical affinities, it pains me to side with Smug. I must agree that Bruce Springsteen is garbage.
He is?
Yeah.
Springsteen.
Ben M. knows what he's talking about.
That was just such a wild take the other day.
It's the truth.
Yeah. He has a terrible voice. It has been completely overrated in the eyes of many. With that said, keep up the good work, hold the line, and own the libs.
Oh, man.
Ben M. spitting facts.
Ben, that is a fantastic review. He really covered it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
He did. Our audience is the best. I mean, we got to do these reviews more often.
100%. Yeah. It's great. I think it's a banger of an episode there, Smug.
I think we did it. Absolute banger of an episode. Gentlemen, thank you so much to Eric Hovday for being on the show, and thank you so much to the Minions. Remember, if you have not yet, subscribe on YouTube, and if you have, be sure to like this episode. So, until next time, Minions, keep the faith, hold the line, and own the libs. We'll see you on Tuesday. Stay ruthless.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.